Jurassic Park has found a new director. Big things happening in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and we prepare for Dune Part 2, along with everything you need to know about the universes you love right here on The Direct Podcast.
Truth is,
I am a Jedi.
I'm the Vengeance.
And I am Iron Man.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome in, welcome on, welcome to another episode of The Direct Podcast, everything you need to know about the universes you love. I am here, your host, Matt Nurkin, and I'm joined, as always, by my friend, co-host, box office correspondent, and senior editor at TheDirect.com. Ladies and gentlemen, you know him, you love him, it's Mr. David Thompson. David, happy Monday, we are back.
We're back. It feels like it's been a week since I've seen you. How are you doing?
I'm tired, my guy.
Yeah, I know you're pushing through this Monday. It's going to be a groggy Matt Rimke performance, but I can't wait for it.
It's going to be a good one. It's very exciting stuff.
I got to say one thing. People out there may have thought, man, this is a dead time in sports. What are Matt and David going to possibly bring up at the beginning of the podcast? And that's what I want to discuss. This moment in time is the worst moment in time of the year in sports. There is nothing going on. Nothing going on. Well, the NBA games still don't matter. They still half care. NCAA basketball is ramping up, but it's still not quite there yet. The NFL's done. We don't even have the combine yet. It's happening this weekend. And even then, everyone and their brother wants to just be like, oh, I'm not going to throw. I'm not going to run. I'm not going to catch. Why? Go to the combine. Why not? Show off your skills.
No, well, it could only hurt some people. I get it.
I guess, but Marvin Harrison's not even going. He's not even going.
Why does it upset you so much?
I like watching the combine. So selfishly, I want to, like, last year was fun. By the way, who didn't throw? Bryce Young didn't throw. Who did throw? CJ Stroud and AR. And Richardson, yeah, obviously, really stood out.
That's why that happened.
Yeah.
Also, I will say, Bryce Young not throwing, number one overall pick.
Well,
That's the thing. If you are locked in at the best value you can be, it is within your best interest to keep that value. And if you're going to throw, if you're going to do this at the other, do it at your college day when you can do it your best. I mean, the combine, I mean, let's be honest. I know we like watching it, and Indianapolis, you know, it's one of the staples of my city. I do love the combine.
Yeah.
But, you know, a lot of the stuff, it's not really a lot about what's on the field. It's the moving and shaking that happens behind the scenes at the combine. It's getting drunk at St. Elmo's, you know, in downtown Indy, and talking to a general manager, talking to this guy's agent, this, that, the other. But I understand what you're saying. I love a college player who is taking his best interest and not just like nosediving his value just because I understand it, I guess,
I understand it too. I guess I just was a little disheartened when I saw some of the news coming out where many people are not going to be there that I would have liked to see run the 40, catch some passes, throw some passes, because I'm still one of those people that just enjoy watching the NFL combine, even though it is boring for 98% of it. I just like watching those 40-yard dashes. I like watching players drop passes, which, to your credit, it's like, yeah, you don't want to go out there and drop a few balls, and now all of a sudden you are going to be listed as having terrible hands by a GM.
That happened to Ja'Marr Chase, a top five wide receiver in the league. And also, the combine is the same place where CJ Stroud took an IQ test and they told him that he was too dumb to play quarterback.
Yeah, that's a good point. But yeah, in general, it's just a slow time for sports, and I can't wait for March Madness. That's kind of where I am right now.
Yeah, no, I mean, March Madness, like the ramp up to March Madness is always such a blast, and I love this feeling. I will say, the Cubs signing Cody Bellinger to a 3-year, $80 million deal, I mean, that ain't nothing. You know, it changes my life quite a bit. I'm very excited to have Belly back on the team. Potheads representing the Cubs is what we need in America, damn it. a good time. Before we get too far into it, I do need to share some news with you that I found out over the weekend. I was at a family wedding, and it turns out
my cousin,
Yeah, absolutely. These are the two that got married in Atlanta back last fall. And now this was just the party, right?
Oh, so, is that that's funny.
No, I was there and my cousin-in-law Ian informed me that his two young daughters, Grace and Cece, both listen to this podcast. So I don't know what to do with that information myself.
Oh, is that right?
So, I don't know how I mentally want to go from there, but hey, Grace and Cece, shout out. Happy that you're listening. Happy to have you.
Shout out. Thank you.
Missed you this weekend. They crushed dance floors, Grace and Cece, let me tell you. They're out there. They're putting in work. They're the, like the two little daughters from Greatest Showman. You know what I mean? When they're off to the side doing the dances.
Yes, absolutely. That's amazing.
Yes, it's good stuff. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we have a bunch of news to get into today. We're going to dive into Dune Part 2. But real quick, I want to let you guys know that we will be beginning our Mutant Marathon, the rewatch of the entire Foxman universe from beginning to end, all of the X-Men movies throughout this spring, really is what it is, heading into this summer. So we're going to begin with our very first rewatch in about a month from now. On April 8th, we'll be rewatching X-Men 2000, the very, very first one. And that will go all the way up until the week before Deadpool 3, Deadpool and Wolverine. We're going to take three breaks in the middle of that to review Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, something David's very excited about. Furiosa, a Mad Max saga, something I'm very excited about. And, not Ballerina.
No, not Ballerina.
Not Ballerina.
That stinks.
I saw someone say, who was excited? I was excited for this.
You sure were. Excited. Me too. A whole year. You can just mark that down for whatever you had listed. 2025. We'll be back.
So the dates might move around a little bit here on the back end. I'm thinking we squeeze in an X-Men draft right before Deadpool 3.
That could be fun. That
might be what we do. But April 8th, we'll begin our rewatch X-Men 2000. We are very excited. So make sure to follow along, rewatch, and listen to that. All right. Now that we're here, let's get into everything you need to know about the universes you love.
That's slander.
It is not. I resent that. Slander is spoken. In print, it's libel.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, everything you need to know about the universes you love. And we begin in the Jurassic era of the Direct Podcast, the Jurassic brand. That's what it was.
I forgot
the word we used there. I said era. We do brand. Red brand, blue brand, yellow brand, iron brand, fast brand. What are the other ones? We had some more. Either way, guys, I'm coming off a 7-hour flight. Like, I am fresh off a 7-hour flight, so I'm not having the best brain day, but damn it, if I'm not here to talk dinosaurs. We talked about it a few weeks ago. They are rebooting Jurassic World. We don't know exactly what that means, but the intention is no Chris Pratt, no Bryce Dallas Howard, new characters, new stories. Jurassic Park is back, and they had a director. They had a director we were all very excited about. His name was
David Leitch.
David Leitch, who has done a lot of amazing action movies over the past few years. And I was very excited for that tonal shift. But he dropped. Someone jumped in. Who is it? A member of the family. A member of the Direct Podcast family. The director of one of the best Star Wars movies of all time. The best Star Wars movie in this century. Gareth Edwards is jumping on to direct Jurassic World 4. For those who don't know, Gareth Edwards, Rogue One, Monsters is visual effects on Monsters. That was probably his like breakthrough. Rogue One, the creator from last year, the super sci-fi movie, and Godzilla 2014, a movie I love, by the way.
Wow.
Yeah. Aaron Taylor Johnson, Elizabeth Olsen. Romantically, a little weird.
Yeah.
Kind of hot. Very good movie. Gareth Edwards, I'm a huge fan. I'm very excited to see what he does with it. David, your reaction to a member of the Direct family, Gareth Edwards, Star Wars director, getting the Jurassic World 4 job. That's big. I mean, that's big time.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting because it seems like Leach left the project due to disagreements in terms of the writing and the direction of the film. Gareth Edwards, I believe, came out and basically said, like, this is an opportunity of a lifetime. I would be kidding myself if I didn't want to, you know, direct the Jurassic World, Jurassic Park movie that we're expecting here. It is very fascinating to me with, obviously, the choice of Gareth Edwards. I think it's not a bad choice by any means. I'm excited to see what he does. I really enjoyed the creator. It was divisive, though, for those that did see it. If you saw it listening, like, maybe you loved it, maybe you hated it, or you're somewhere in between there. I really enjoyed it, and especially he is a great visual storyteller. Like, the creator, for its budget, looked fantastic. That movie just looks wonderful, great sci-fi. So I'm excited for his visual nuances and just style to move over to this Jurassic branch that we have here. It's also very fascinating, and it's very obvious that Universal is dead set on making this July 2nd, 2025 release date, which seems completely unreasonable sitting here today. But if it happens, oh my goodness, what a July it's going to be. But it's still sticking to that date. There's been no change to that. And it seems like they're going to try to green light and push production on this thing as quickly as possible. And sitting back for a second, by the way, it really is crazy that only 3 years after Dominion, we're getting a reboot, or not, whatever this is going to be, right? A retelling, a reboot, a new story. Like, Universal really is not messing around with the Jurassic branch. And they just want to keep pumping these things out. And I hope this one's better, because I wasn't a big fan of those Jurassic World movies. So I'm hoping for the best with this one.
It's one of the most fascinating franchises of all time. They are the 85 Bears of movies, in that they have one of the best movies ever made. And they've been living off those laurels for 40 years.
Yeah, it's like 30 years.
There's arguably one good Jurassic Park movie.
Yeah,
it just so happens to be like fantastic, a top 10 movie ever made. Like,
right.
Like, it's insane. Gareth Edwards, I think, you know, I'm always, and this could be wrong of me to do, I haven't really looked back and reflected on if this is the right way I should be viewing movies or not. But whenever a new director gets hired for a movie, or a new actor gets hired for a role, I always look at previous, if he or she are one of these previous experience type people. You know, like Gareth Edwards, a name we know. I always look back at their kind of resume a little bit and see, okay, what can he take from each of these movies to come together and enhance this very established IP? And here's what I'm seeing.
Yeah.
He's a visual effects guy. That's how he cut his teeth. The Creator was his passion project, which I've only seen like that 8-minute clip that came out on Twitter or whatever.
Mm.
And I got to watch the movie. It's on my list. But visual effects, like, heavy, right? That's his passion project, and it was that. You look at Rogue One, working within an established IP, experience there, home run, grand slam, touchdown, Tony Gilroy experience, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then also Godzilla, I mentioned earlier, I really like that movie. I really like that franchise. I think it's a really, like, it becomes Fast and Furious near the end of it. But I think those first three Godzilla and or Kong movies are really amazing. The first one, you know why I love it so much, David?
Mm.
They do the Jaws thing. They hide the monster within scale. You know what I mean? Like, you watch that first Godzilla, you don't get like this big hero shot of Godzilla until like 3/4 into the movie.
Right.
But you get a lot of like stomping 8 streets over, but he blocks the whole street off. A tail dragging through a building or whatever. Like, it's hints and subtleties. It's Jaws. It's better when you don't see the monster. And then when you do see, it's, whoa, here it is.
Yeah.
So he's got that visual suspense thing down. I think all of those come together, specifically working on a Godzilla movie.
Yeah.
They all come together to lend toward what I think a good Jurassic Park movie would be. Now, the issue with the previous Jurassic Park movies has not been visual effects. It has not been scale. It has not... definitely hasn't been working within the IP, because that's been a problem since 96. But it's the writing, it's the story that they're putting behind it. And I think that this Gareth Edwards move makes me think they're very confident in the script that they have.
It does seem that way. It seems like they just want someone to quarterback this film and live out their direction, right. Which, you know, they brought back the original writer. They're trying to make amends for this franchise, which keeps making money, but they know they need to actually produce some high quality films that fans can get behind, because then, because they still have us, like they still have fans on the hook. Dominion still was a success at the box office. That movie stinks. That movie is absolutely terrible. And we people still went out and saw it. And if this one's great, right? If this one ends up getting, you know, rave reviews or just positive reviews, they know, because apparently people still love dinosaurs, we'll be all back to see it. And we will be cheering it on and wanting it to succeed. And Gareth Edwards, I think, will help do that. It's really interesting with Gareth Edwards. He doesn't really do that much. He's not this prolific director. He's only taken on so many directorial projects, and most of them are very big budget sci-fi-esque or monster movies, like we mentioned. And he does seem like a proper fit for this. So overall, I am excited about this new addition, even though I think sticking to the original plan may have been better. I am happy with what you said, where they do seem confident with their direction for this new one.
I know you can see the trailer right now from the director of Rogue One.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, that's a pretty big selling point. Like, as superficial as that might be, that's Gareth Edwards pulling his value pretty quickly into this process. You know what I mean? But I agree with you. I think they're looking to pair someone to do the technical visual part and not have to worry about the story. You bring in somebody who's also a story writer, somebody who's also a narrative driven director, they might have opinions and changes on the story. I'm not saying that's a bad thing, but they want someone who can, like you said perfectly, quarterback the script and story that they have, as opposed to come make their own thing.
Yeah.
And I'm not trying to be hyperbolic, but of those types of people, Gareth Edwards feels like a pretty top tier type of that person to bring in here.
Right.
Especially coming off a pretty big budget movie, he's probably hoping to keep the momentum going. So it's exciting stuff. It is exciting stuff. Gareth Edwards, Jurassic World 4 will be all over it, I'm sure. Another bit of news that came out today. It was something I only saw on Twitter. I didn't really read much into it, but
yeah,
I didn't need to see much more than the images. My God.
That was pretty much it. You know, it was basically the images and who the story behind it, which was a tweet initially, and then who these people were that had the ideas and created the images.
Spider-Verse visual development artist Yuki Demers revealed that he and My Dad the Bounty Hunter director Patrick Harpin approached Warner Brothers and DC Comics 5 months ago with a pitch for Batman Beyond animated film. Spider-Verse person doing a Batman Beyond animated film. That's all you needed to hear there.
Yep.
And they released two images with it. And it looks like Batman Beyond, but in a Spider-Verse movie.
It looks
like that's exactly what it looks like. It's at night, which I realized when those photos came out, very few scenes of Spider-Verse happen at night.
Yeah, the you end know what I mean? Of Across Spider-Verse.
There's the end of Across Spider-Verse, and then there's the Christmas chase scene with the funeral. He goes to the grave. And then
at the beginning.
The first time we meet Jack Johnson.
Yeah.
Not much and other night.
What's Up Danger is that night.
Oh, fuck yeah. Fuck yeah. I think Collider when I think that scene, which obviously he's got to get there.
Right. Good point.
Can we just review those movies instead? Let's just do that. But it had a tinge, a sprinkle, a whisper of TMNT in there.
Yeah.
For me a little bit too. Last year's amazing Ninja Turtles animated movie. But David, a Batman Beyond movie by the Spider-Verse people. I'm not sure how people aren't swinging as hard as they can to make that happen.
Dude, I hope this happens so much. There was part of it too where whoever the original creator was that posted initially also mentioned that they initially said like no, and then it ended up being a maybe. And I'm just saying right now, James Gunn, DC, there was a rumor speculating or going around. The rumor mill was out. There's going to be a Jurassic DC Justice League animated movie coming out. Forget that. Just do this. Just make this an Elseworld story. Put it in theaters. I think this would go crazy. Like, I grew up with Batman Beyond. That was one of those animated shows that I grew up on. I loved Batman Beyond. And I remember when I first kind of realized what the show was and what the plot was. I'm like, oh, this is so cool. Like, it's an old Bruce Wayne, Terry McGinnis, my guy. Like, I love Batman Beyond. And just talking about these images that came out, right? Like, they just look fantastic. If you haven't seen them, please go on Twitter. Just Google. If you just Google Batman Beyond concept art, it'll be the first thing that pops up. And what I love about these is that it doesn't look exactly like Across the Spider-Verse. It's a little, it's almost a little more diving into like the kind of what's it's like the Metro Neo neon, like
cyberpunk.
Yeah, cyberpunk, exactly, kind of feel to it. It looks a little almost less like a comic book and more leaning into that animated show style in a sense, but it looks fantastic. Like, I think this would be so awesome and a really great animated, in this style, a great animated story to tell, because this isn't the, really the path for just a generic Bruce Wayne Batman story, but it could be, right, with these awesome colors and use of light and at, you know, at night, like you mentioned, as he is, you know, a version of the Dark Knight. I think this would just be a home run. And that's the thing. Like, we're talking about this today because this blew up when these photos like were released and the story behind them. Every fan of Batman Beyond was like, oh, my gosh, like, can we please get this? Can we please do this right now? So it got me very excited, and I really hope that DC decides to run with it, because I think it could be a really, really cool product, especially James Gunn's previously talked about how he wants to work with Lord and Miller. Bring him in. You know, they're about to be done with Beyond the Spider-Verse. Let's get an awesome creative team on this and do something over at DC.
Yeah, keep him out of Sony's hands. I think that'd be a good idea. Batman Beyond for me growing up, the same as you. It was always on. It was just always on Cartoon Network. Batman Beyond. That was just how it went. And for me, like my memory of Batman Beyond more than anything is like it's weird to say it's like the coolest Batman suit ever because it's so not a Batman suit. There are cooler like fastball traditional Batman suits, but of all alt Batman suits, this is the alt Batman suit.
Yeah,
like the stealth suit with the red wings and just the largest Batman signal that you'll ever see on the front. It looks like Robin is being Batman, you know, now right. That I'm looking back at it with more knowledged eyes. Yeah, I think that, I mean, anything anybody from Spider-Verse wants to do, I'll be excited to see. Those movies are not only are those movies so great, you can just tell that every single person rank and file up to the executive producer, everybody involved is putting so much heart and genuine talent into every little thing that they're doing, which means anytime somebody that's been attached to that film gets attached to something else, I will be excited about it. Like,
I actually liked The Flash. Okay. The Flash totally ruined the idea of Michael Keaton being the voice for Bruce Wayne in this movie. So,
well, no, we don't need Michael Keaton to be the voice of Bruce Wayne in this movie.
We don't.
No, we have one of the greatest voice actors of our generation. And also, the actor who plays, in my opinion, one of the greatest sitcom TV characters of all time, Will Friedle, who voiced Terry McGinnis in Batman Beyond. He is Eric Matthews from Boy Meets World. He is one of the greatest gems America has ever had. I love Will Friedle so much. I have my entire life, and I feel like every 2 months I learn that he's the voice of something else that I also loved. He's Ron Stoppable. He's fucking Batman. He's the Joker a lot. He's amazing. And Will Friedle, I think, should be involved in anything that this movie does, even if it's not Batman. Terry McGinnis, I think that, yeah, bring Will Friedle back. I think it'll be fun.
That'd be cool.
That's my guy, dude. Boy Meets World's like one of my favorite shows ever.
Right.
And rewatching it like as an adult, Eric Matthews is so pitch perfect. As a TV character, the older brother, he's an idiot, but he's also the smartest guy in the room. Wonderful stuff. I'm sure this is falling on deaf ears as Boy Meets World came out in 1993. So I will move on to the next story. Batman Beyond. Yeah, make it happen. Let's do it. Moving on to the red brand, the Marvel side of things, the MCU specifically.
Yep.
So the Hollywood Reporter, just like every 3 or 4 months, has just this giant article that like has every little bit of news about the MCU. Can we not just get like every 2 weeks a big feature? Why does it have to be this big Pantheon article every time? Where do we even want to start? Let's start with the big one, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah.
We should start at the top. I think we should start at the beginning.
Let's start from the beginning.
Now that I've
thought one more time.
Oh, come on. Come on, man. So good. Avengers 5. No longer the Kang Dynasty. It will be retitled. It won't be Avengers 5.
No.
It will be Avengers something. But it is no longer the Kang Dynasty, putting more precedence on the idea that because of story concerns, because of fan reaction, because of the incredibly public behind-the-scenes issues with the character and his actor, the MCU will be moving away from Kang. And this is the biggest step yet, removing the word Kang from that title. David, if you can audibly describe to the people at home what I am doing right now.
Dribbling a ball, shooting a basket.
Swish.
Ooh, went in. All right.
Swish. 6 months I've been saying this. 6 months. The only thing standing in the way of a full Kang pivot that really wouldn't even be that bad is the title of this movie. And right. I know we got a post-credit scene. Let me talk to you about five other post-credit scenes we have to get to as well. This title, having the word Kang in it, is the biggest reason this whole Jonathan Majors thing was so contentious from a narrative standpoint. Obviously, there's everything that goes along with it. It's a very terrible thing, whatever. But like from a what does MCU do narrative, which was a big one, I feel like the title was the biggest hurdle. Hurdle removed.
Yeah, I agree. The article also mentioned, just sticking on Kang, that actually since Quantumania, they decided after that kind of like flopped essentially at the box office and didn't really land, that maybe they would move away from the character. I think I agree with you. Changing and just removing that subtitle opens it up now. We don't have to really be stressing about when Jonathan Majors will not be returning to Marvel Studios, but when Kang could return in the MCU. I think this puts in doubt if there will even be a recasting, which is, you know, it is definitely, I think, upsetting for those that are big fans of the character Kang and like the direction it was heading with Kang. But I'm just very fascinated as to what their new direction is going to be. I do think we'll see a new direction, or at least something that looks like it, in Deadpool 3, where once we leave Deadpool 3, we'll have a better idea. But this was the right move to me. If I had my two ways about it, we know Secret Wars is coming. Let that come. Give it some time. Make the next Avengers movie something more grounded, right? What's the follow-up to Brave New World? What's that going to be? And Thunderbolts, you know, like these Daredevil Born Again, maybe a Spider-Man 4. Like what the Marvels, like what could be a story that would culminate a bit of these phases, but not in a very... in a massive multiversal way. It'll just be very interesting to see what they're doing here. The one problem I currently have with the Avengers movies is that everything seems to be leading to Secret Wars. And the problem is we have an Avengers movie releasing before Secret Wars, apparently. Now that could even change at this point if they wanted to just, you know, negate this movie and just basically make Secret Wars a part one and a part two, which I'm down for. And I think that might be with the direction they're going. But like I said, if I had my way of it, it would be more of a grounded Avengers 5. And then we do Secret Wars, because we're probably going to get a Doctor Strange 3 before Secret Wars. And that will open things back up with the multiverse before we get into Secret Wars. And we know Deadpool 3 is going to be setting it up. So it really is a confusing spot. But I do think once Deadpool 3 is released, we'll kind of have a better understanding of the overall direction of this multiverse that is clearly in a shifting direction right now.
Nothing you said was wrong. I only have things to add, right?
Yeah.
I understand, like, okay, Deadpool and Wolverine will do multiverse stuff. We saw the TVA there. That's what they do, right? Obviously, whatever Doctor Strange is doing is multiverse. I also rewatched Multiverse of Madness on the plane.
Oh, yeah.
Going out to Florida. I could do a whole 4-hour podcast about that movie. Everything I love, everything I hate, how everything I love gets in the way of the things I hate, and how everything I hate gets in the way of the things I love. That is one of the most I am so passionate about that movie, and I still don't know how I feel about it. You know
Didn't
what I mean?
You guys chart in the 60s? Yeah.
It's a really like cool line, and like looking back, weird, weird moment in that movie. You know what I mean? Like, shit's getting real. Yeah, whatever. Different conversation. But
yeah,
I understand your point of like looking at Deadpool and Wolverine. That'll be a multiverse checkpoint, let's call it, right? Looking at whatever Doctor Strange 3 is going to be, that will be another multiverse checkpoint, you know? Fantastic Four.
Yeah.
We assume at least a post-credit scene will be some sort of multiverse checkpoint, right? But the thing that's holding me up is you look at No Way Home. You look at The Marvels. Like, those are two movies that on paper, like, if you hadn't gotten the idea that Doc Ock and Green Goblin were going to be in No Way Home and it was just Spider-Man 3, you know what I mean? Or if you look at The Marvels even all the way up until you saw the thing, you never would expect those to be multiverse checkpoints on this big list. They so are, though. You know, like, the No Way Home one's very obvious. There are variants. There is a multiverse, like, whole narrative in there. But the Marvels, it's at the end, but it really does, like, add to this cake. You know, it really adds depth to the whole thing. So I am excited to see how they keep weaving it in there. I hope it's not just in your fucking face about it. It is Disney. I hope it's not, like, taking away from characters just to tell the multiverse story. That would be very post-Endgame Marvel. Shout out Bob Iger, not Bob Chapek. I've been very into Dune lately, David, with this movie coming out this week.
Yeah.
So I'm excited for very subtle, old-school MCU weavings of multiverse stuff in a variety of projects coming up. Right. Making Secret Wars a part one, part two just makes so much sense to me because the biggest thing everybody's worried about is how are we going to bring everybody together, do a thing, whatever that thing might, Battle Worlds, whatever, and also have a good movie. Make it two movies. Like, that's the pushback on that is wild because, like, what are the two, like, what's the best part one, part two in movie history? It's Infinity War, Endgame. it's that's so a part one, part two, like in an insane way. I know we haven't seen Fast X part two yet, but I'm willing to claim it.
I'm with you. I think the part one, part two will be the direction they go with. And I wonder what that means. I think it could be a retroactive where they do just change the name of the Kang Dynasty to not Secret Wars Part One, but to a different, you know, a different title. And it essentially acts as that part one to what will be quote unquote Secret Wars, kind of like the opposite of what happened with when it was Infinity War part one, part two. And then they waited a very long time to name it eventually Avengers Endgame.
It's a shaking finger. We get it? Because we're in the Endgame now. Can we review those movies?
Yeah.
Can we start a separate podcast where we just go rewatch movies again? Is that the worst idea? I don't know. Moving on with the MCU. Hollywood Reporter just kept it going. There's not a ton of context here, but Agatha Darkhold Diaries in good shape. David, do you have anything else on why that might be?
Basically, there was only one day of reshoots, and they seem very confident with where the series is right now, and it's on track. There's not much. They didn't have to basically change much, and there's a really understanding within Marvel that it's going to be a success, or that it's turning out the way they wanted it to.
I call that the John Wick 4. Remember, there were no reshoots there either.
Yeah. Can't say the same about Ballerina. Yeah.
Oh, man. I'm bummed about Ballerina, man. I guess that's news, too. Ballerina's been pushed an entire year, 2025. I'm bummed.
Yeah. I'm just really excited to add action scenes. That's all it said. Just all add action scenes. Yeah.
That's all I want. Darkhold Diaries, like you said, you kind of said it perfectly there at the end. It's going to be a success, or rather, it's going to be exactly what they want it to be. And that's what we've been talking about all year with Echo, X-Men 97, and now Darkhold Diaries. Very, very high floor as far as, like, no one's expecting it to break the fucking bank. But high ceiling as well if people enjoy it. Low stakes, high reward type stuff. Obviously, anytime you can get Katherine Hahn on screen, you do it. I felt like, and I've been feeling like, this is a great special presentation. This is a great one shot. This is a great this, that, the other. They're doing the spotlight thing, I assume, with Darkhold Diaries, so it probably will be more of a series. Whatever it ends up being, I'm excited for more Catherine Hahn because it's Catherine Hahn. Also, Agatha is a player in the Fantastic Four in like a very real way. And I saw a really cool article by Screen Rant the other day. And I didn't really read the article, but I read the title. And you know what it was? MCU characters who could cameo in the Fantastic Four 1963.
That's fun.
Bucky Barnes, Peggy Carter, Howard Stark, Agatha. I mean, it is very possible.
That's fun.
Catherine Hahn shows up as the nanny to these fucking kids. Us completely knowing how bad of a bitch she is.
Oh, no.
I think that could be very fun. I'm excited for Darkhold Diaries. Again, especially after just rewatching Multiverse of Madness. Darkhold's the coolest thing in the world, man. Always has been. Always will be. The evil book of the damned. I'm a big fan.
Yeah.
You think it'll be music?
Oh, absolutely. Oh, 100%. We got Aubrey Plaza joining the cast. I think this is going to be wacky and crazy and fun. And it's the same, I forget the name. I think it's the same writer from WandaVision. Not awesome. Matt Shackman, but yeah.
I don't know. Not enough time. I hope that's what they say about me when they put me in the ground, David. Wacky, crazy, and fun. If you can make that happen, that'd be great. I would really appreciate that.
Oh, Jack Schaefer.
Jack Schaefer. She's great. She's fantastic.
Yes. And she's back. And it was her idea. It was her full idea.
Agatha's like her character. Like that was her within WandaVision. That was her passion project.
So with Schaefer being back, that's kind of why I was thinking, yeah, there'll be music. It's going to feel similar in tone, I think.
I don't think we're talking about Jack Schaefer being involved enough there. Like she's huge in WandaVision. 3 years ago today, since Grief is Love Persevering.
Oh, is that right? Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, you know what's crazy about that reminds you with Jack Schaefer is that if you watch that, I think that was like one of the only what do they call them on Disney Plus?
Assembled.
Yeah, Assembled. Like I think that was like one of the first ones. That and like Black Widow. And I remember watching that and just her talking about the series and the ideas. It's awesome. You know, if you haven't seen that, go check that out because she has so much passion for those characters.
Shout out Matt Ferguson, the brand designer for the Assemble series. Fantastic Four. We move on the Hollywood Reporter article. Two big stories coming out here with two big blockbuster movies. Fantastic Four, the script is polished by Eric Pearson, known for his role in Thor Ragnarok and Black Widow. And we're scheduled to begin shooting in London this upcoming summer. I'm going to do the resume thing I did with Gareth Edwards. Black Widow, Thor Ragnarok, two scripts I really like, two very different, wide-ranging emotional scripts, but both very, very funny. Two very funny movies, Black Widow and Ragnarok. I think Black Widow gets slept on for how funny it is.
Yeah.
I think Florence Pugh and David Harbour do so much for that, obviously, being as Florence, has she ever been funny in anything else other than Yelena?
I'm trying to think because honestly, in what I've seen her in, no
dark and scary stuff.
Yeah, it's more serious. Yeah,
haunting, dramatic stuff. But yeah, no, I think that both those movies are super funny, but also so tonally different. And I think that bodes very well for a Fantastic Four movie that I think has a tone, it has a style, it has a vision, it needs a voice. Bringing in someone with that breadth of MCU skill, I think, is a very good piece and something that I will be touting as we get closer.
Yeah, apparently he's known for kind of getting scripts over the finish line and kind of like rounding them out, just like putting on the, you know, dotting the I's, crossing the T's, making sure everything looks good. And for Ragnarok and Black Widow, overall, those both, you know, worked out well and written wise were well written, both of them. With the scheduling, London, which was long since been, you know, they've known for a long time this film is going to be filmed in London at those studios they're going to be at this summer. That's great. That is on track for the, what is it now, late July 2025 slot. So that seems awesome. Obviously, they're going to find some time to get Pedro out there, who is going to be this massive piece of the MCU. I don't know if you saw from the SAG Awards on Sunday night, or was it Saturday night? I'm forgetting now, but those SAG Awards where there was the image of after Pedro won the award, you just saw him like shocked and you just saw RDJ in the background clapping. And I'm like, man, this is so cool. That is for the fans right there. That was such an awesome moment, which in the moment was just about his performance in The Last of Us, but just felt like so much more as an MCU fan after this news.
It'll bring a tear to your eye. Like, it's really cool to watch. It's exciting. I'm excited to watch RDJ watch the MCU grow after him. You know what I mean? Like, now that he's back in the public eye, like, he wasn't really around for Phase 4. You know, no. He was taking that time off. He did Doolittle. It bombed. He was gone forever. but, like, after he's done Senior and he's done Oppenheimer, now, obviously, he's fucking back. And I'm excited to see him, you know, talk about this franchise he built, which is a very cool thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I tweeted it's the Illuminati that never was.
Yeah.
You know, in another life.
Maybe we'll be one day.
Probably. Yeah, I'd like to, what was it? Another life, I'd like to do laundry and something.
Oh, yeah. Everything ever at once.
The Rocks had googly eyes, David. You get it?
On Netflix now, by the way. Streaming on Netflix.
I just don't think that the googly eye Rocks moment hits me as hard as it hits everybody else. I'm not sure if I understand it enough. I know it's beautiful, but I don't know why.
You're down this rabbit hole right now. No,
I think about it a lot.
That's so funny. I really like that. That obviously I love the movie. But I like the Rocks for sure.
Okay, Quan. If you smell, okay, Thunderbolts. This is a lot of like getting good people on projects day. You know what I mean? Thunderbolts, Joanna Callow, showrunner of FX's The Bear, has hired to work on the script for Thunderbolts that is being reworked. Filming to commence in March in Atlanta. It came out today that Florence Pugh has already begun filming for the Thunderbolts, which would make sense, her being the lead of the movie. You know, she's a very busy person. There's a lot you can do without a script as far as establishing shots, suit fix, all that stuff. So, getting people from The Bear on stuff, take everything I said from Spider-Verse, apply it to here. Exact same thing.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Good update with Florence Pugh saying that she has already, that filming has basically already begun.
Hi, Jasmine.
She can't hear anything. that makes sense. And it's in line with what seems to be supposed to be a May 2025 release date. So this thing better get rolling. This thing better have started filming yesterday, because it's going to need every second, I think, to get this thing done in time. So I'm happy to hear this, and I'm excited about this new direction, it seems like, and kind of the reworking of this script, because in general, I feel like they're behind the scenes. I think Kevin Feige is making some slight adjustments to, I think in general, just talking about Thunderbolts, even maybe not Darkhold Diaries, but Thunderbolts, what they were going to do for Fantastic Four, what they're doing with Brave New World and those reshoots. I think in general, what's happening here is they're not changing 85% of the script in terms of the base level, what is the story, but that extra 15% of the cinematic thread that is the MCU is being reworked and being redone and being retooled. So when all these films do release, it is on one thread. And we don't have as many post-credit scenes that just go out into the abyss or giant elements of movies that just kind of go out into the abyss. Whereas before, when there was less projects and they're lessening their output, you would feel some more of those kind of consequences from one project to the next. And I think that's what we're going to get moving forward 2024 and especially 2025 and beyond.
There's a rhythm to it. You know what I mean? I feel like we've lost the rhythm, or maybe we're doing more jazz at this point, which is fine every now and again, but I feel like we've gone off on a few different too many tangents, and we got to bring it back to a nice, just bass and cymbal, ba 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 ba. You know what I mean?
And the jazz is great when the individual sets are awesome, you know? Right. Then you love the jazz. But when the jazz just sounds kind of crazy and you wanted to kind of just get back to something where you can kind of tap your foot to, that's where we are right now.
Give me Darren Williams Jazz. Do not give me Ricky Rubio Jazz. You know what I'm saying?
There you go.
For the people who understand that one. I mean.
That was a wild one. That was a great one.
Was it Ricky Rubio or was it Dante Exum? I know Ricky Rubio played for the Jazz.
Dante Exum.
I think Dante was drafted by the Jazz at number 7.
He was Australia. On the Jazz, yeah. Ricky Rubio
Australia
was...
Dante Exum.
Ricky Rubio, when he... Was he drafted by the Jazz?
Timberwolves.
No, Timberwolves. Mm-hmm. And they waited years, right, to get him. I remember that whole thing.
He was like 17 or some shit.
Was that not the 09, the Steph draft, where there's like 4 point guards drafted before Steph Curry?
Yeah, because it was him and Finley. Him and Finley from Syracuse. Shout out
terrible.
Syracuse. Yeah. Shout out Newhouse. But no, so... but back to the world building, I think you're 100% right, because that's what Kevin Feige... I say this like I know the fucking guy. I don't know. But that's how this is what it's always felt like Kevin Feige has done, is that he sees a project, he lets the artist do their artist thing, and then he comes in and just highlights different moments, beats, and situations within a movie or show that can add a world building element. This can tie into this. You know, here's an opportunity for that. It's never been requirements. I feel like it's always been additives. And I always go back to phase 2. Which I still think is, we should rank the phases someday. I know they don't matter anymore, but we should. But phase 2, one of the coolest things about phase 2 from a world building standpoint, because people forget, like, that was the first real world building we got, like, on a grand scale. Obviously, the first 6 movies tied together so great because it led up to something so awesome. But every single phase 2 movie, in one way or another, outside of Guardians, dealt with the fallout from the Battle of New York. Like, that really was the tie.
Yes.
That's the thread you were just talking about, right? It was just the Battle of New York happened. Here's the fallout shown in 4 different points. And then Guardians. But like,
and then think about Age of Ultron and Sokovia.
Sokovia, of course. That is immediately all phase 3.
The next year. Like, that was so great. Going from Age of Ultron, boom, into Civil War the next year. That was, I mean, that I think in kind of a way, obviously, like, Infinity War Endgame is the peak of the cinematic universe because it literally like peaked right there. But getting Avengers 2.5 in Civil War the next summer, that was just amazing. Like, that is when you felt like you were actually living in this universe.
Before No Way Home, I used to say that Winter Soldier, Age of Ultron, Civil War is the best 3 movie run you could watch in the MCU. I know it's not like a back to back to back, but if you watch Winter Soldier, Age of Ultron, Civil War, back to back, it's such a great trilogy. Like, that's an incredible trilogy just right there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think that, and you can take what you said and just bring it back one step further. You know, we obviously got to Civil War, which was a direct sequel to Age of Ultron, but even in Ant-Man. Okay. So guys, I got a plan. First step. We call the Avengers. And what does Hank Pym say?
Exactly.
They're probably busy dropping countries on people. You know what I mean? Like, that's it. That's all that was needed. There wasn't more than that other than the opening scene. But, like, that was the world building. That put you in that world. And it gave a good context point. So that's the kind of stuff I think I'm hoping for. On Joanna Calla real quick. I've been, you know, at weddings when it's like catching up on TV and movies that you've watched. And you get recommendations. You give recommendations. People ask you, like, hey, did you watch this? How'd you like it?
Yeah.
Hey, should I watch this? I told people all weekend, if The Bear 3 is as good as season 1 and 2 were, it's going to be like Ted Lasso, one of my new favorite shows of all time, without even trying.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So getting anybody from there, it's going to be great. It's going to be really exciting.
June is supposed to be massive. Yeah.
What was that?
June is supposed to be massive. Right now, there's 4 shows expected to release in June that we might be covering on this podcast.
Where are they?
The Boys, House of the Dragon, Bear, and The Acolyte. All in June, apparently.
You bury The Acolyte? That we're definitely going to cover that.
Like, well, no, I know. I was thinking in my head. I forgot about The Acolyte for a second. Well, because The Acolyte, I have no there is no visual representation for the Acolyte in my head besides the one logo.
Yeah, treatment. The logo with the two colors. That's it.
Yeah. by the way, before we get out of news here, quickly, Blue Brand, forgot to add it to the notes. I meant to. We got two things. I'm curious your thoughts.
Oh!
It's all positive. But yeah, big thing with Superman Legacy. I've been talking a lot about, which, because I'm so locked into Superman Legacy. I'm so excited. But first thing, the table read happened. The Kingdom Come symbol leaked that was on like the table cards. Very interesting. A lot of theories going around on that. And then, of course, the next day, James Gunn, he released a cast photo of everyone. It was just awesome to see. Yeah. It was awesome to see everyone together because we've seen all these reports over the months. David Corenswet looks 6'8". It's awesome. Nicholas Holt, shaved head. It's just, it looks fantastic. It seems like I have two takes on the whole thing. Very interesting to see if they go truly with the Kingdom Come symbol, what that will mean. But I do think just how the suit looks overall will matter much more than just that symbol, even though I think that will matter big a lot. Part. Yeah, definitely a big part. And then I think on Otis, a character that is another assistant to Lex Luthor, he was confirmed because the actor was in the photo.
Nice.
So that makes me think that Lex has a bigger role in this movie than I expected, which is pretty exciting. Right?
That's two side characters for Lex.
Exactly. Already. Exactly. So Lex, like LexCorp, Lex Luthor is going to have a pretty big role in this movie, it seems like. There's still so many questions. Who's the main villain? What's really the plot? A lot of theories out there. But it begins filming now this week. Not next week anymore. This week, which is very exciting.
Hey, come here for all your latest Superman Legacy updates. You know what I mean? That's great. As far as the logo goes, I mean, the Kingdom Come logo is like pretty inarguably like it's definitely not the most iconic, but when you see it, it jumps off the page. It's like the same thing I said about the Batman Beyond suit. Of the alt Superman logos, that's my favorite alt Superman logo.
Right.
I will say James Gunn, he's a seasoned vet in this game of comic book movies. He is born in the fires of Marvel Studios. He knows the game. I'm not 100% sure he would just release the logo on a name tag and not have like any like big hubbub about it. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like that's going to be more of an event. Like the
I know
logo for the movie, but
yeah,
it's not nothing. You're 100% right. It's not nothing. It'll be very interesting to see how they do it. This really is where it gets a little like, what do we value more? But like, it's going to be playing the game, comic accuracy, you know, staying true to a story, a character, a world that we care so much about, but also let James Gunn cook. You know what I mean? Like we've never had expectations like this for James Gunn. It's just never been there until Guardians 3.
Yeah.
Like Guardians 3 is the first time we had expectations for James Gunn. Even in the Suicide Squad, the trailers pulled that off at such a comedy right away. He did the classic James Gunn thing, surprised us with an incredibly awesome emotional story behind it. But
yeah,
this is Superman. Like you have to do the Superman thing to some degree. This is where we start playing that game a little bit.
Yeah.
This is where maybe me and you get into some fights.
Oh, I can't wait. No, I love the theory. Boba Talks over on, he was on Twitter and he has a YouTube page. I was DMing him a little bit back and forth. He had this great theory that kind of went not viral, but it was circulating a lot when this logo came out, because he's had this theory, right? Like he brought this up months ago, because in 2022, James Gunn tweeted out a Kingdom Come image and said making plans. And it was, you know, a still from that comic book. And while Superman Legacy is not going to be Kingdom Come, obviously, if you know that comic and that story, some of the ideas about it could be in this story, which are that right now, the DC universe that we haven't seen yet, it has a lot of heroes and villains and metas running around, but they're all like maybe paid for, and they're not really they're not really living up to the superhero name. Like, superheroes are almost seen as these kind of, I don't know, lesser than vigilantes, I suppose, right? They're not sure. Like, they don't have that, like, legacy, if you will, hey, of what a superhero should be. And that could be part of the story where Clark in this movie and Superman kind of set a new precedent for what it means to be a true superhero. Whereas right now in the DC universe, it could be seen as more of a joke. And it's just very fascinating. And it kind of adds up when you see Lex having a big role, what Lex views on all this would be, what these other characters are going to be, right? We have a Green Lantern, we have a Hawk Girl, Metamorpho, right? Mr. Terrific. It's going to be exciting to see what all this means. An authority member is in this movie, and the authority are getting their own movie after this at some point. That is the plan right now. So it's going to be very fascinating to see. I think at the end of the day, all of this considered, we are going to hit the ground running with this new DC universe. And that is going to be so exciting for all of us.
And what a deviation from the DCU, where it was like, as soon as Clark got to Earth and Superman was revealed to the world, there was not a single DCEU movie afterwards that didn't reference it in some sort of way. Like, he is the one.
Exactly.
Like, the Alpha Omega Superman. Like,
which I think...
And him blending in a little bit more would be such a stark difference from the... Isolation is not the right word, but the pedestal he was put on in the DCEU, rightfully so. It's fucking Superman.
Yeah, and it's going to be interesting. Like, I think just that fundamental, like, shift and change in the universe will make this feel so distinctly different. And what a smart, clever way to distinguish these universes, where at the beginning of this, Superman maybe isn't, it's not an origin story. He is Superman and he is doing his thing, but he's not known. He doesn't have a statue, right? He's not this godlike figure, but maybe by the end of it, he is seen as more of a, like, the hero, you know, like, in the world, in Metropolis. And there's so many theories. I do think, last thing, we will get a suit reveal, I think, within the next few months, because James Gunn is going to want to release that suit before we see it on a set photo, right? Because they are going to different locations for filming. Some of those details are now coming out, like Ohio, Atlanta, somewhere, I forget where it is, where it seems they're going to be doing, like, some Kryptonian stuff, Fortress of Solitude stuff, which sounds cool. But before those images leak, I think we will get a suit reveal, and it'll be sometime soon. Rachel Brosnahan said that she's seen it, and that got me very excited.
She's incredibly attractive. I'm developing a crush on Rachel Brosnahan.
This is very anti-everything me on this podcast. I think Brosnahan's going to steal the movie. I think she's going to be like the... Obviously, I think Corin Sweat's going to be good as Superman. I think you're going to leave that movie, and it's going to be like, can Lois Lane be in every single DC project moving forward?
Love it. Should have been Amy. I think that it's very exciting. I just realized as you were talking, James Gunn's Fortress of Solitude is going to be fucking sick, dude.
Yeah.
Like, that is going to be, like, I think Ego, you know, and I'm like, that, like, what an amazing CGI experience that was. This is going to be pretty fucking cool. I'm pretty pumped.
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, that has been everything you need to know about the universes you love. Really quickly, let's go over Dune and get us prepared for the cinematic event of the year, Dune Part 2.
Who's in the box?
It's not about money.
No, what's in the box?
That's about sending a message.
What's in the fucking box?
All right, ladies and gentlemen, it is time for What's in the Box as we look at Dune Part 2. For those who aren't familiar, we haven't done this in a while.
No.
You know, we didn't do it for Madam Web. Sorry. You know, like, sorry, guys. You know, we didn't. Should we? Thank you, everybody, who reached out about the Madam Web review. That was very cool. We got a lot of awesome responses from people. People seem to really like it. We've gotten responses from other people saying we're too negative. Check out the Madam Web review. I think we do negative pretty well. If we really need to.
That's a great point. The dichotomy of those two pieces of feedback.
I hope that makes you sleep a little better tonight, my guy. But ladies and gentlemen, we are doing What's in the Box. For those who aren't familiar, we look at what is the range for the upcoming movie at the opening weekend domestic box office. We talked to our box office correspondent, David Thompson, about why that will go over, why it will go under, and then give our predictions for the movie. David's going to give us a line. I will bet the over under, and we will move forward with pride, justice, and a bunch of sand people doing sand shit. Dune Part 2, directed by Denis Villeneuve, who is quickly becoming a defining director of his generation, at least within the sci-fi genre. You know what I mean? Like, I think Greta Gerwig has, like, reached that name status that I think nobody has reached in a little while, right? But from the sci-fi point of things, it's Denis Villeneuve. I think it's Greta and Denis going back and forth. Like, who's going to be the director of the 2020s? I think we'll find out over the next few years. It's a part two to Dune 1 that came out 2021, October 21st. I have watched this movie twice in the last week, Dune, the original, and just my quick recap, this is so my shit. It is so Game of Thrones on the big screen. This is a Game of Thrones movie that we never saw, and I know everybody out there is cringing, oh my god, Dune was the first Game of Thrones. Game of Thrones wouldn't exist without Dune. I didn't read the book. I'm sorry. Sorry. You know why I didn't read the book? I didn't want part two to be spoiled for.
Yeah, exactly.
So ass backwards with how I should be approaching these things. But no, but like, I think if anybody's having a hard time getting into Dune, watching the first one, because it is very heady, it's very dense, it's not the most satisfying on first watch. I think second and third watch is great. Hammer home the Game of Thrones-ness of it. There are houses, there are politics, there's witchcraft, there's these like magic forces being supported by this like hyper political, like almost throwback but futuristic setting that we're in. It's very exciting. David Thompson, before we get into the box office stuff, your just overall general thoughts on Dune. You just recently saw it on IMAX, so your eyes have experienced Dune the way you're supposed to experience Dune. How does your heart experience Dune?
I love Dune, man. When I was rewatching Dune, I just forgot how with Paul, it is like a chosen one story. Oh. And I'm such a sucker for a chosen one story. Yeah. You know, Anakin Skywalker, one of my favorite fictional characters of all time, right? The chosen one. Harry Potter, excellent story, excellent character.
Jesus,
the Bible, right? The New Testament is awesome.
Tobey Maguire.
Andrew Garfield, right?
Yeah,
Garfield's right. Literally the chosen one.
Yeah, you're that? Right. I take it back. I take it back. You're right. I lost.
Why didn't they bring that up in No Way Home? That would've been so funny. How is that? Did your guys' dad? Okay, never mind. My dad? What?
Dad? Never heard of him.
Yeah.
Never heard of
Who's
him.
Dad? All I know is May. and Norman. With that being said, I love Dune. I can't wait for the next one. I think it's going to be phenomenal. It is awesome to see the reviews, the absolute glowing reviews, but I'll hold off on that for just 1 second. I love how this is a chosen one story, a more complex chosen one story. It is deep sci-fi. And I cannot wait to, I will probably read the book and read the sequel to the book, which they might make a movie about afterwards. Because at this point, I don't want to see spoilers. But once I do see the movie, I want to dig in. I want to see what the book actually says, how they change from that. Watch those YouTube videos, dig into it. Apparently, it is pretty dense of a read. Like, it's not like the easiest read in the world. But I'm excited to dig into that. And I'm just excited to experience this theatrical experience. Now, especially that Zendaya is fully going to be in the movie as well.
And Javier Bardem. Let's not sleep on one of the better names we got out there right now being in this movie. It's very exciting. Let's get into the numbers. Let's get into the box office. David, I have opening night IMAX tickets at 7:30, completely sold out theater.
Oh,
very exciting stuff.
Yeah.
Very exciting stuff. So the official range, the projections for Dune Part 2, opening weekend domestic box office, which is, you know, the best like indicator of success we can come up with right here, right now. It is currently tracking between 65 and 80 million overall weekend domestic box office. A little bit of frame of reference for you, David. Here's the worldwide box office totals, total runs for Denis Villeneuve movies.
Okay.
Incendies, I don't know what that is. Made 16 million. Feels like a smaller movie, right? But Prisoners was his like big blockbuster debut. That made 113. Prisoners in 2013. Big. Enemy, didn't see it. 4 million. Sicario, which many say is his best, 84 million. Arrival, 202 million.
Yeah.
Blade Runner 2049, 257 million. IP sequel wasn't loved by the people who funded the movie. But then Dune, date and day streaming and theaters, was still able to get 434 million, which, if you ask me, pretty damn good.
Very
when
good.
When you could have just watched it at home.
Yep.
So Dune Part 2 is projecting between 65 and 80. That would put him on track to, you know, be challenging his number two spot almost immediately if he can hit the higher end of that range. So, David Thompson, the first question here in our What's in the Box segment, why will this movie go over projections?
Yeah, I think this movie is going to go over projections because not only is the cast incredible, I mean, Tim Chalamet, obviously, coming off of Wonka at this point, which is now, because of the delay, even better, right? Like, now Chalamet is an even bigger star because of Wonka, which is even crazier to think.
400 million for Wonka.
Yeah.
See that shit?
I saw it. I mean, at this point, like, Chalamet, he can open any movie.
Money.
That's as simple as it is. And obviously, Wonka specific, it's a kids' movie, holidays, there's all those things. But still, he owned that movie, and he was the only, pretty much the only name plastered everywhere on that one. Zendaya is fully in this. Javier Bardem is back. Rebecca Ferguson, who is incredible in Dune 1. Underrated performance. She is wonderful in that. We now have Florence Pugh joining the cast. Austin Butler, very hot name, joining the cast. Elvis, you may have heard one of his interviews where he still sounds like Elvis. So the cast is one thing, and that's always been the case with Dune. Dune 1 had an incredible cast as well. Josh Brolin's back for part 2 as well, I believe. No Jason Momoa this time though.
My boy, but man, what a death, huh?
Yeah. Jeez. Oh, God. Awesome. So good.
Duncan Idaho.
I will say a reason why it's going to go over is because of the delay, because of when it is being released. I think right now we are starving for a film in theaters. 2024 has been bleak so far. Okay. Like, I haven't even started my like Letterboxd 2024 list of movies. I haven't seen that many. And I'm sad to put Madam Web on there and whatever else I've seen. Like, I'm so excited to get a real cinematic experience to kick off 2024. And Dune Part 1 is going to be that thing for people and going to get people back into theaters. And the last and final thing I'll say for why it's going to go over is now word of mouth. Because it is a 97% Rotten Tomatoes. Last night, a lot more people saw the film. 5 out of 5 star reviews, left and right on Letterboxd. Everyone is raving about this, putting it up there with the best sequels of all time. And I think that kind of buzz is going to get a lot of people out to the theater to see this one. And I think that more people than you would expect to be interested in a movie that is nearly 3 hours long and deep sci-fi are interested in this. Because of that cast, because of Chalamet, because of Zendaya, because of Florence Pugh, because of Austin Butler, there's a whole demographic of people that now really want to see this just because of them. And that can't go understated as well. Like for instance, my wife, like Jasmine, she loves everyone in the movie and is, because of that, is really excited. Doesn't really remember the first one. Definitely doesn't want to rewatch the first one. But is excited to see the second one.
Yeah. Christopher Walken, Dave Bautista, Skarsgård. I mean, we can keep going on.
Yeah, it keeps going on and on. Oh, Christopher Walken, I cannot wait for
him. Him as the Emperor is going to be fucking nuts, man. I'm so excited. He's going to do something weird. I guarantee he does something weird. I can't wait. I'm so excited. That's why it's going to go over. For those who are new to What's in the Box, word of mouth is kind of like the buzzword, right? Like if we can hit that word of mouth threshold, like, I don't know what it is, but it feels like there's a threshold of word of mouth like compared to projections, where like if you hit a certain point of word of mouth, your projection carries that up a little bit. And I think that, and I think, and honestly, when you sent me these numbers, they seem modest. So like, I think word of mouth plays good there, but like we just went over, Denis Villeneuve, not the best box office track record.
Yeah.
Outside of Dune, like Blade Runner was tough. I mean, that movie cost way more than it ended up making. So
right.
It's an interesting situation. David Thompson, to that point, Denis Villeneuve, why will this movie go under? What is the under case for Dune Part 2?
Yeah, I think, look, it is a sequel. There is homework to be had. Not everyone may have seen Dune Part 1. It is, like I said, high sci-fi, something where you really have to dig in. It is a whole new world. Many people aren't interested in that kind of a story. Many people aren't. It's not. This is not one of those movies where you just sit down and can just, you know, kind of sit back and relax and enjoy for 90 minutes. You're going to be there for 3 hours. You have to really plan around this sort of a thing. It's going to be an event. And while I'm very confident in the movie's outlook, I do think at least it's only PG-13. It's not R-rated. That'd be another, you know, negative against this one. PG-13 is helpful, but it is something that is serious, not for everyone. The cast counteracts that a bit, but there is still some of that there where not every demographic, not every general audience member wants to see Dune 2. But because of those rave reviews, now we're looking a little bit more optimistic.
Mm-hmm. I think you made a really good point there that like, it's not for everyone, but the cast is like you're not going to find, it's hard to find a demographic that can't latch on to somebody from this cast across the, you know what I mean? Like, and I'm most excited for Rebecca Ferguson. She's like seventh on the list.
Oh, you know, and she's so great in these movies or in the first movie.
Unbelievable. Yeah. She's unbelievable in everything she does. She's amazing. Dude, the yellow dress with the sniper that she puts the leg up for no goddamn reason. It's just the coolest thing in the world, man. It's
awesome.
God, I love her. So yeah, I there's plenty of reason for this to go under, and it's not even like there's a bunch of points, but the part two is tough when part one is a lot. Like that's one of the more exploration heavy movies I've ever seen.
Yeah.
And I will say I've liked it so much more on second and third rewatch. Like, you know me, I'm a big, like once I'll see a movie in theaters, and maybe I'll see it a second time, or maybe I'll see it when it comes out on streaming. But then I like to not touch it for as long as I can, because I don't want to oversaturate it. Like the Captain America movies are a little sour to me for the rest of my life, because fucking A, have I seen them a lot, you know?
Right.
I've watched Dune twice in the last week. Like I love this movie. I love rewatching this movie, picking up on things I didn't pick up on before. I watched it on the plane today. On a plane, I was exhausted. I'm coming home from a weekend in Miami, and I'm still finding little things in this movie that I missed. And now I'm putting together some theories. Dude, have you heard the theory about the doctor's wife?
The doctor's wife?
Dude, okay. In the first
the one that died?
Yes, the one that betrayed him but gave him the poison.
Well, I know. Yeah.
So he said that Skarsgård's got his wife. And they're taking her apart and putting her back together again like a doll. The theory is that crazy spider monster that was in the room with him, the Baron and the Bene Jesuit lady that she like talked to and told to leave, like the crazy, that's fucking her, dude.
Oh no,
dude,
that's crazy.
Nuts.
Oh no, I don't like that.
I don't like it either, but I also kind of love it. You know what I mean? That's what I'm saying. Like, this movie is so heady, and it's not simple, and it doesn't hold your hand at all.
No.
I think it's not only have you seen Dune, have you seen it twice?
Right.
Because it is so much better that second time, right? So I do think that is a barrier. Like, there is a game, but we hope that sci-fi shows up. Like, sci-fi's been for movies. Like, theaters in America were kind of built on sci-fi. A little bit, you know, after the monster generation. And I think that's what the hope is. And it feels like one of those things, right? It's either just going to go under or it's going to fucking skyrocket over.
Yeah.
Like that's kind of what it feels like.
The only other thing I'd say for under is kind of to just counter what I said earlier about the rave reviews is that we put a little too much into the rave reviews, whereas everyone who's going to see this movie is going to see it anyway. You know, like those that are excited about the reviews already had their tickets 2 weeks ago.
Good point. Great point. See, that's why I bring you on. That's why you're the box office correspondent, baby. I love the way your brain works. I've been saying that to you for almost 5 years now. That's crazy.
That is crazy.
We are here at the deciding factor of our What's in the Box segment. The range is 65 to 80. We think it's going to go over because of the reviews and the cast. We think it might go under because it's a very, it's not approachable. It's not just unapproachable. It's not approachable. Like, you have to be into Dune to go see Dune 2.
It's not Wonka.
No. Fuck. I did love Wonka, though.
I really enjoyed Wonka,
too. Really liked Wonka. I'm going to listen to our review of Wonka later, I think.
Chalamet filmed this movie before Wonka.
Nice. I thought you were about to tell me Chalamet is going to come on the podcast next week. That would have been something.
Oh, that would have been electric.
I'll say this about Chalamet's acting. I think he's a great actor. I think he's very good at charming. I think he's very good at action-y. I think he's very good at angry. It's not the most organic performance. He's very pretty, and it's not his fault that he's very pretty. But like, when he's trying to be serious or sad, but he still just kind of looks like a supermodel, there's not a lot of realism there for me. You know right. what I mean? Is that weird?
I know what you're saying. He's thinking like that. It's the Chalamet looks very unique, and the fact that he is the way he looks and acts the way he does, it's not this natural, I want to say, like a Miles Teller, all American kind of a guy. It's totally believable. Chalamet, right. He's not giving that. And that's been a lot of his performances where it's not that. I know exactly what you're saying in terms of like natural, you know, and like believability. And I feel like no one really knows. There's never been a movie where I've seen Chalamet and I'm like, that must be exactly how he is in real life. He's not acting at all right now. Whereas there's some actors, it's like Glenn Powell in that's anyone. But, yeah, exactly. Like that's just him right it's now. He's not acting. Yeah.
And I don't want to make something that's not there, which everybody's trying to do just because Zendaya exists and she happens to be dating not Timothy Chalamet, Tom Holland. You know what I mean? Not like Timothy they are Chalamet. The knots of each other. Like, honestly, like dads get Tom Holland and Timothy Chalamet mixed up all the time.
Yeah. You know,
when Tom Holland is screaming for help underneath the rubble, that's not like superstar Hollywood darling Tom Holland. That is a very scared child crying for help.
Yeah,
I never get lost in a Chalamet performance. I'm hoping that changes here. I really do. Because like I said, I think he's very good at action. And I'm excited to see so much more of dude. That one little bit we get in the first one where he's doing like the spin stab thing. And bro.
A lot of action in this one.
This is going to be fucking sick. I'm so pumped. The line is 65 to 80 by Professional Projections. David Thompson, set your line, buddy. You get five over, you get five under. When we come back next week and look at it, what will Dune Part 2 open at domestically opening weekend?
Man, this is a great question.
Set over.
You know, I know. I'm just nervous about this one. And I've been bullish on Dune Part 2 in terms of its overall gross at the domestic box office, worldwide box office. I think it's going to make $700 million worldwide. Opening weekend domestic. I'm going to go with our line here. I'll go 75 million. I'll go 75 million, where it is just under that 80 mark. I don't see it quite getting to 80. 80 is roughly the Oppenheimer number for reference. And I could see it doing a little bit under what Oppenheimer did. With that being said, I could also see where it goes over because there is no competition this weekend. People are pining to go back to the theater and there is that excitement. But I do think it won't quite get there because, and I'm very curious how this plays with a younger generation, whereas with Marvel, let's just say, I'm trying to make some comparisons here to like a sci-fi film or, you know, action big stars. Like, there is something that is very teenage about Marvel Studios specifically. Mm-hmm. Dune isn't teenage to me. It's very adult in many ways. While it's not R-rated adult, it does seem very adult to me. So I think that's what kind of keeps this thing under 100 for sure. And I think just a little bit under 80.
Right. Along the same lines, it's challenging. Like, it is a challenging movie to watch. Like, you have to be, you don't just have to be paying attention. You have to be looking for it. You know what I mean? And to your point earlier, though, like, it's not very teenage. Timothy Chalamet is very teenage. Like,
exactly.
He was very teenage. Zendaya is teenage.
But will teenagers go actually see the movie or just watch clips on TikTok, right? Sure. Like, that's kind of what we're getting into now.
You guys are the worst.
You guys, I'm 25.
TikTok, oh, whatever. That was me being old, not you being young. That's what that was. That's what that was. 75. I'm gonna take a very special over here. This isn't just an over. I heard multiple family members of mine who previously were just like, eh, on the movie theater, tell me this weekend, I'm loving going to the movies lately. You know what I mean? Not like lately, 2024, but like since the last time I saw them, you know, like last year, whatever.
Yeah.
People are back, dude. Like Barbenheimer did something.
They went and saw Barbie and Oppenheimer. Yeah.
Barbenheimer did something. And then like Wonka was really good. And like, you know, the other things happened that made
anyone but you.
Huh? Anyone but you. If you went and saw the Marvels in theaters, you enjoyed it. I think that it's, you know, more often than not,
yeah.
I feel like people had fun with that. Like, things have been happening in theaters. Even the bad movies have kind of been fun to laugh at a little bit. You know what I mean? Like, Lost Kingdom and Madam Web had a good time laughing at those movies. So I think theaters are back a little bit. I think this is a movie that can push over the edge. I also, I'm going to buy the hype of, like, this is what's going to make Denis Villeneuve, like, an A-list.
Yeah. Hall of Fame.
It's not that he's not already an A-list guy, but he hasn't had that, like you said, 700 number movie yet. Like, he hasn't really like passed that pinnacle. Nolan and Villeneuve are very similar in that, like, they're very complex, challenging movies that you can't passively watch in any respect.
No.
But Nolan has multiple billion-dollar movies and like franchises and all these things. This is Villeneuve's chance to kind of make up for people adore 2049. It's not saying it's a bad movie, but it just wasn't a financial success. This is a chance to get back at that, I think. And so, yeah, I'm going to take the over. I'm not going to say it's going to blow it off. We're not going to do the 100 thing. But yeah. I do think over. And I think we'll both be excited if it hits right around that 80 range.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. 80 is awesome.
I think 700 was a really good number.
Yeah, and I'm sticking by that. And I think this movie has a lot of potential to last a long time, be a big hit overseas, and to have those legs to get to those kinds of numbers. Because there's some more movies coming out in theaters over the next few months, or, you know, over the next month, let's say, while it's really in the, you know, opening this weekend until the beginning of April. Like, how much will it really generate? There's not that much that would take away from specifically these big premium screens, too. That's another factor here. Like, this thing has, like, you're going to IMAX. That costs a couple extra dollars, as you know, right? And that goes towards the box office. And that, you do have to factor that in, those premium format screens that everyone wants to see this movie in, similar to Oppenheimer, which had all those premium format screens, helped it get over the top as well. Which, on the reverse of that, shout out Barbie, which until a re-release had no IMAX screens and no premium screens and made $1.3 billion.
Good movie.
I Am Ken is being performed at the Oscars.
I was just about to bring up the Oscars. Dune 2 is going to have a presence at the Oscars. There's no two ways about it.
Oh, yeah. People are saying...
It's all 1 week. It's all 1 week that it's happening.
Well, and yes. And what's crazy is that people are now saying Oppenheimer should be thanking Warner Brothers for delaying this 2024, because Dune would be sucking in some of the Academy Awards right now, possibly that Oppenheimer could win from this year's Oscars. So it's fascinating to see how that, I mean, that was really a very, you know, a critical move that is now going to relay into a year from now in those Academy Awards.
I can't imagine any movie taking away from Oppenheimer, I will say.
I think there's like special effects kinds of awards.
Special effects Oppenheimer are fucking amazing. Like, That movie might be perfect.
It really is a great movie. I rewatched it recently. It is amazing. I love that movie.
It's incredible. I think about it a lot. 3 weeks until Ghostbusters. So there's your run. You know what I mean? There are your legs. Like, there,
exactly.
There's
your Ghostbusters.
There's your IMAX vacancy.
Yeah. I don't see a lot of hype for Ghostbusters, too. That's the thing. It's like,
it'll grab an IMAX, though. Like,
for sure.
Like, it'll steal a screen, for sure.
I don't know if Kung Fu Panda will. I'm curious.
Do they do animated in IMAX?
They have. Oh, I saw Mario in IMAX.
Oh, yeah. I forgot.
That was awesome. Yeah. So it depends. Yeah.
Fair enough. All right, ladies and gentlemen, that is your What's in the Box for Dune Part 2. David's got 75. I have the over for opening domestic for Dune Part 2. Next week, it's going to need to be some pretty big news to make the episode. I'm not going to lie to you.
We're going to need the suit reveal. Come on, James Gunn. Give it to us.
Tell me. That's going to be a 3-hour episode if we get a fucking suit reveal.
It's coming at some point. It's coming over the next few months.
Very excited. So next week, we will do Dune Part 2 review. The week after, we will react to the Oscars. And like I said at the top, we're a little over a month away from our Foxman rewatch. So get ready for that. And just keep following along. Keep reaching out. We loved it last week. Again, thank you guys so much for reaching out to us about the Madam Web review. We had a lot of fun making it. We're really glad that you guys like listening. Reach out to us on Twitter. Suggestions, ideas, thoughts, comments, concerns, whatever it might be. Please drop reviews in Apple Podcast. That helps a lot. And tell your friends, man. You know, everything you need to know about the universes you love. This is where, if you love loving the shit that you love, come here. And we're excited to talk to you about it. For David, I'm Matt. Until then, we'll see you next time.